We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Oh, hello, welcome, it's the final four. Get up, it's only 11:30 on the East Coast, and we have the final four completely set. I'm Gabe Ibrahim. That's Megan Gower. That's Calvin Wetzel. We are waiting on Christy Winter Scott, who may be joining us from Greenville, where she was doing the Maryland South Carolina game, which South Carolina won, and then Virginia Tech won in the later game. So we have our entire final four set. Megan, how are you feeling about it?
Good. I mean, I feel like everyone's obviously circling that the Iowa South Carolina matchup. Most people probably had their eye on when we got the bracket to begin with, but I mean, I think it's going to be two really great games, and we'll get into it more here, but it should be a fun weekend.
Calvin, how you feeling?
Yeah, no, I was going to say the same thing as Megan. I mean, I've been, you know, not just since the bracket was released, but honestly, ever since Caitlin Clark and Aaliyah Boston started playing college basketball, not that they're going to guard each other or anything, but I wanted to see that matchup, the best because it's been the best offense and the best defense for 3+ years now, or however long, not just this year. And in any sport, best offense and best defense is as good as it gets. So sign me up.
No, I think the Final Four is going to be amazing. But let's settle back into the Elite Eight and really give a good recap of what happened in this round, because there was some interesting stuff. I wouldn't say any of the games are like classics, right? Like there's no one game that's like, oh man, that's like going to live in the memory forever. But there's plenty of amazing performances and plenty of good storylines going into the Final Four. Do you guys want to start from the latest game we just watched? So Ohio State, Virginia Tech, and then work our way back through the weekend?
Works. Let's do it. Yep. Let's do it.
Okay, so let's talk about the game that just happened. Ohio State, Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech wins 84-74 in Seattle. It took a just monumental effort from Georgia Amor. Had 24 points, 7 of 19 shooting. Not her best shooting night, but like still got it done when it counted the most. And she came back from a pretty rough looking injury. And then you just look at Elizabeth Kitley's line, 25 points, 12 rebounds, 9 of 14 from the field. Didn't feel like she had that throughout the game until you looked up and you saw that she had that stat line and she had some more possessions in the post. So Calvin, what did you see in this game that allowed Virginia Tech to win?
Well, you brought up like Georgia Amor maybe didn't have her best shooting night, but like when I'm looking at it here, I mean, she took 14 threes. She got to the line 6 times. She still was pretty efficient. 24 points on 19 shots and 6 free throws. Like, that's not bad efficiency, because when you're getting to the line and when so many of your shots are coming from three, your field goal percentage doesn't have to be 50% to be efficient. And the other thing is the degree of difficulty of some of her shots. When you're taking some of those, you know, step backs, contested, and just like the way that the defense is kind of selling out on her with this run that she's been on with 20 plus points, what, every postseason game, going back to the ACC tournament, or almost all. I actually think she played really well. You know, whatever, 7 for 19 doesn't sound sexy, but I thought she was great on the offensive end.
Yeah, and she really orchestrated the offense. And I think her biggest contribution may have been breaking the press for, I mean, not may have been, it was, let's be real. It was the biggest contribution that Georgia Amore made for Virginia Tech, was breaking the press against Ohio State. Megan, you saw UConn get decimated by that press, which was very impressive from Virginia Tech. Why, I mean, how was it seeing Georgia Amore just kind of dice her way through it whenever she touched the ball?
Yeah, I mean, I think she did what, like, UConn just totally failed to do and, like, didn't try to pass the ball through it, which is going to result in a disaster, and just drove the ball and was able to break that. And I think we saw really quickly in that first half, especially, the Ohio State came out with the press, I don't know, four or five times. They broke it every time, got to the other end, scored in the lane, made a three, whatever. Clearly wasn't working for Ohio State, and then they turned off the press for a while. So Virginia Tech was really quickly able to make that not effective at all for Ohio State.
And then, yeah, and it just kind of completely sapped a lot of the energy, I think, from Ohio State. But they were just, like, the first half of this game was some of the best shot-making I think we've seen throughout this tournament, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, I was like, this is going to be a shootout. Like, first to 90 is going to win.
and like, the pull-ups from Georgia, and JC was getting, everyone's getting to the room. Cody McMahon, I mean, I want to pull up the media stats. I want to see what was the split between her first and second half stats. She ended up with 18. Does anyone know?
No, I think she had quite a bit in the first half. I don't know it off the top of my head. I think it was over 10 of that at least came in the first half.
Yeah, I think
Taylor Mikso went off in the first half.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
In the third quarter is kind of when things changed for both teams. I didn't see a noticeable change in the defense. I just feel like Ohio State kind of started missing their shots in that third quarter.
Yeah, well, Taylor Mikso, what did she start? 5 for 5 from three?
Yeah.
And she finished 7 for 11. So there you go. Yeah, I mean, she was one of the big, but it wasn't just her. You're right. A lot of them started missing shots. And Ohio State honestly didn't press a whole lot in the third quarter. They didn't press a lot in the second quarter, I don't think. They pressed, you know, early in the game, and they pressed late in the game, but they they got carved up so early. I think they had to kind of chill out on it for a while. And that's just a credit to Virginia Tech and Georgia Amore, like you said. In the Final Four, I know we're talking about the Elite Eight right now, but outside of Caitlin Clark, I don't know who you would want with the ball in their hands in terms of breaking the press or, you know, getting their own shot, finding people, other than Caitlin Clark, than Georgia Amore.
She really runs the offense with just a lot of pace, right? And it's like, when we say pace, I feel like people think, oh, speed, like, go fast. Like, no, she understands the ebbs and flows of when you're trying to bring it up fast, when you're trying to break the press and slow down because they're going into something different, and you don't want to speed yourself up against the press. And I think that was one of the best things she did, was break it, get across, chill, and then let Virginia Tech work in that half court offense. But Ohio State's half court defense was, I mean, they gave up a lot of points in the first half, but it looked pretty good anyways. Like, the shots were difficult at the very least.
Yeah. I thought they made some progress. I think a big part of that is Cody McMahon. I think having her in the lane has made a lot of difference for them on both ends in this tournament. I thought defensively she's improved, but also, I mean, the way that she's been able to score in the lane in both of these games, even though Ohio State didn't get the win today, has been really impressive for a freshman in the tournament.
Yeah, she's been one of the best players in the tournament. I think she just kind of started to turn this corner, right? Like, earlier in the season, I think who said it? I think Ricky Harris actually said it to Holly Rowe at some point, and Holly relayed it to us that, like, there's been a switch flipped since the middle of, like, that Big Ten schedule, where she's not, you know, just running down the court full speed, not charging into people, and really taking care of the basketball. And that's why she was able to get into this run that, you know, ultimately ends here in the Elite Eight for Ohio State. But I think she's shut out, and this team's going to be really good. And, well, we have 48 hours to find out if J.C. Shelton is coming back to Ohio State, and it seems like she might.
Yeah, no, the thing about Cody McMahon, I mean, you were talking about Georgia Amore, her pace, and to me, she just seems always in control, no matter how fast or slow she's going. And Cody McMahon didn't really come into college with maybe having that level of control. She would go too fast for her own body sometimes, but we've seen that the last couple months. Her body and the strength and athleticism that she has, if she can be under control, even at full speed at all times, Like, who's stopping her in the half court in transition? There's no one. I think that's kind of the flip, that switch that you talk about is just her being able to kind of be in control of the pace and the speed at which she's playing.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I think that's what Ohio State lacked for so much of the season, was like a talent in the lane. And if they're going to add that next year with her having another year under her belt, they're going to be a lot better than they were this year, which is obviously already pretty good because they made it to the Elite Eight.
Yeah. And the Big Ten should be changing, depending on who does not go. It's so hard to say right now.
Yeah.
We'll see what next year looks like next year, but Ohio State going to be good next year, regardless of who else is in, who else is doing whatever in the conference, because they're just really, really talented. Do you, Megan, do you want to take a, what's the opposite of a victory lap for your Virginia Tech?
Yeah, I've struggled this week. I did really well the first weekend and really struggled this weekend on the takes.
I held serve. I knew we were going to come through.
I can't let Megan take the bullet alone on that one, because I was I picked against Virginia Tech a few times too, and they proved me pretty wrong. So good for you, Kenny Brooks. Good for you.
Yeah. Well, and they game plan just so well. They're so organized. I think it's just like they are the most organized team here. And that's saying something, because there's a lot of great teams that have played together for a long time. They are the team that is most organized and gets into their stuff. I do want to look at like what our bracket was. I forgot what we actually picked here.
I think we picked UConn.
Yes. And we picked our bracket.
We picked Tennessee.
Bad.
It's
not good. You know, yep. I watched like all of 5 minutes of men's basketball outside of the UConn run this year, and my men's bracket is like winning my work pool. My women's bracket is just
That's how it works. Did you see Ken Pomeroy, who only covers men's, had terrible men's bracket, and he's winning his women's pool? So that's how March works. But you
to
know,
be fair, my men's one is only winning because I have UConn winning it all.
Actually, same deal. I'm not a UConn fan like Megan, but I did have UConn in the Final Four, so that sometimes it works out. But hey, what I want to know, we can go back later and figure this out. If none of us had used any strikes, if we had just gone with all our original picks, would our bracket be better? Because I think it might have.
Might have.
I don't have that information right in front of me.
Struck out some of our good picks.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's I don't think so, because we actually ended up picking Virginia Tech to get to the Elite Eight at the very least.
We did. Oh, yes. Yeah, we did. You're right.
We did.
I think that was due to a strike.
Good call on that.
The Cleveland State pick. That's where it went awry. That was our worst one.
Christian? Portland. Yeah.
Okay. Christy. Hello.
Hey.
What's up?
You know, things are. My suitcase is over there somewhere. Hi, guys.
Hello. Hey. How's Greenville?
You know what? I just had a little something to eat. So, yeah, I just hustled after that last game and got back to the room. But it's very, you know, it's very quaint here. I like it here. It's very sweet.
I like it.
I need to turn my phone, don't I? Let's see. Is that better?
There it is.
There we go.
Oh, wait, my TV's on. Is that distracting?
Honestly, the lighting in this hotel room is really good.
It is?
It's pretty impressive, yeah.
Oh, I have it right under a lamp, actually.
That's the television professional right there.
That's why
we love having Chrissy around. Not just the thousands of points in college basketball, it is the TV professionalism.
Hey, man, you know, improvisation.
Also, you know, we're going to talk about it. Me and Chrissy usually have like 5 minutes to talk before the podcast, and that usually is like 30 minutes. But I didn't know this. Chrissy, I didn't know your husband was a 1,000-point scorer at Miami. I was going through the records yesterday. You were?
Yeah, he was. Ahead. And he was co-defensive player of the year with Alonzo Mourning. Yeah.
That's wow. Big
yeah, but he was a guard, so yeah. So, you know.
What's even more impressive?
Yeah, no.
I was going through the 1,000-point scorers and stumbled upon.
Popped up? Oh, yes. Yeah.
Back but go Canes. Still go Canes.
There we go. That's how we started again.
We're talking at the other ACC team. Well, one of the three ACC teams that made it to the Elite Eight. Virginia Tech and how they got there. Chrissy, were you able to watch this game?
I saw the second half. I got back here right when the third quarter was starting. But it was close. Like the second half, it was like just Ohio State couldn't get shots to fall. And then McMahon got hurt. I hope it's nothing serious. I saw her go to the back. So hopefully she's good. But, I mean, Virginia Tech, you heard Kenny Brooks say, we just have to stay true to ourselves and what we do. At the beginning of the fourth quarter, that's what he told Holly, and that's what happened, right? I think they got the ball to Kittley. That's what they do. That's what they do. And it worked, and it was high percentage shots, and they got to the free throw line. And I think when you have a press like Ohio State has it, and they were able just to drive right through it, it really didn't afford Ohio State the ability to do what they like to do, which is squeeze you to the sideline. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think? So we actually just had the press break discussion. Were you surprised at all that Georgia Amore was able to get around it? Because I know, the way Virginia Tech got her the ball.
Yeah.
Whether she was not always the first person to touch the ball in the inbound, mm-hmm. which I think was smart because then Ohio State was to trap that first person, so they made her the second person, and mm-hmm. she was able to dribble through. Were you surprised that she was able to get through that press?
I was, and I'll tell you why. In their last game, in Virginia Tech's last game, they turned it over like two or three times in a mm-hmm. row. And Kenny Brooks called the timeout. Mm-hmm. And he told Amore, go get the ball. Yeah. And when he said that, I was like, yeah. They need for her to wiggle through because she has so many hesitations. Like she's mm-hmm. hesitating, like pausing and freezing the defense and then blowing by them. Because she had that speed, that explosive first step. So I think once she got the ball, he knew that they were going to be able to break the press and they wouldn't turn it over multiple mm-hmm. times in that last game. So I think he learned, and that probably happened throughout the season as well, but I specifically saw him say that to her, go and get the ball, right? So I think I was definitely surprised because I thought with Ohio State's pressure and their ability to be in sync like that, I thought that would make a big difference to how they bring the ball up or brought the ball up. And I was concerned because I was like, well, if they turn it over, then Kittley can't get touches. Mm-hmm. And that could be the entire show. But it wasn't. They got down there and then they got it to her. So that was the difference maker. I think their ability to solve breaking that press.
I think it's a big credit to Ohio State that they were able to, really be in this game.
Yeah.
Despite not being able to press, because this team's identity is pressing, and they were knocked out of it, and they were able to play a good half-court defense and make a ton of shots in that first half. And that's what I was saying. You missed the good part of the game when both teams were just making any shot they wanted. Just
I think it was about 4 minutes into the game where someone missed a shot.
Yeah,
wow.
either side.
Yeah,
really.
Taylor Mikesell made her first 5 threes. So it was the fireworks were flying in the first half, and then regression to the mean happened. Anything else on this game, Calvin or Megan?
I feel like we covered it. Yeah.
Sorry, Chrissy, you did miss the first. You missed the first half of us talking about this game as well.
Oh, that's all good. I was trying to leave the group, but I got here, so appreciate y'all.
Is the Greenville Media Hotel Bar popping?
You know what? It was like a little restaurant-y tapas kind of, snackage going on. Sure. It wasn't too crowded. It wasn't too bad, for a Monday night, I guess. Maybe on the weekends it was good, but, it was low-key vibes.
Yeah.
It was nice, though. It was really nice, though. Yeah.
At last year's Greensboro Regional, I hung out with a bunch of Iowa people. I guess we'll all be hanging out with Iowa people when we go to Dallas. Although, Christy, are you coming?
I will be in Dallas.
Yay, Christy! are you covering Iowa? Is that Big Ten networking?
Yep. So the deal was if any Big Ten team made it to the Final Four, then I would be the reporter reporting on it. So, I had my pom-poms out. I had all the different colors of pom-poms. Like, somebody get there, please, so I can go. But it'll be fun. It'll be fun.
Well, let's talk about the game that you are currently at the Maryland South Carolina game, which I can't find on Statcast, which is why I'm stuttering. because I was looking for here. It's a long list of games that have happened in the NCAA tournament. But South Carolina and beats Maryland 86-75. It was close at times. It was close for most of the first half, and then South Carolina pulled away. We've seen this movie before. On last week's show, I called it a crockpotting.
Yeah,
on Twitter, and perfect, people seem to like it. And it does. It is like a pressure cooker. You know, there's eventually build like up the pressure, the fouls,
the frog thing, the whatever what that thing is. What's the frog thing in the boiling water or whatever?
Oh, out of the frying pot.
The frog in the boiling water. The water doesn't start boiling, and then it gets boiling and doesn't realize it. You've never heard this thing?
No, nope.
I don't know what it's from. All right,
almost all of us.
Anyone from Calum's neck of the woods that wants to help him out?
We're gonna look this up later. I swear it's a thing, but that's a big whiff on my part.
Midwest anyway, folks,
we're gonna go with crockpotting. Crockpotting is better.
Crockpotting.
That's the hashtag.
Hashtag crockpot.
Hashtag
crockpot. A Cox crockpot. Cox crockpot. And it really was that, you know, just eventually Maryland had to succumb to the foul trouble, the missed shots, the offensive rebounds, everything that kind of goes in South Carolina's favor just because of the way they play, because they're such a good basketball team. Not surprised, but I think it was a good showing by Maryland. Christy, what do you see being down there?
Well, you know, Maryland came out of the gates like swinging, right? I think they were up 6 after the first quarter. But then foul trouble crept up on them, and you know they had 3 starters down with 2 fouls. It was Faith Misonis, it was Diamond Miller, and Cheyenne Sellers, all with 2 fouls early in the second quarter. I know Diamond went out with like 30 seconds in to the second quarter, and then shortly after that, maybe with like 7 minutes to go in the second quarter, Cheyenne's down, and then Faith picks hers up with like 4 minutes to go. So they're without their key people, right, on both sides, not just their scorers, but their defenders, right? So then you see South Carolina have a 23-9 run in that second quarter because they don't have their key pieces in, but give South Carolina credit. But at the same time, Maryland didn't have their whole, you know, like 3 of their key cogs in there. And they had good momentum after that first quarter, leading by 6. They were plugging away, and then, kind of lost their cushion and momentum there.
I too thought it was a bad thing to not have Cheyenne Sellers and Diamond Miller on the floor, but they could have been out there. They like only had 2 fouls. And I know Calvin at the very least agrees with me. Like, I understand you gotta hold back the player because you can't get you 3 fouls in the first half is bad. But I thought letting South Carolina go on that run obviously it's the first half, but that run really took the wind out of Maryland's sails. Can I get someone to agree with me, Megan, Calvin?
Because like once South Carolina goes on that run, to come back from it, it's really hard to come back against them. So I think maybe you don't put them all back out there because you don't want all of them to pick up a third, but put someone back out there to see if you can get something going on offense.
Yeah, that's the thing. Having them all on the bench at the same time, that's where you really give up that run. And if you just have one of them out there, like, and this is like the biggest game of your season, and these are your stars. Like, at some point, at least one of them, you got to have enough trust to be like, hey, you can go give me 3 minutes here, 3 minutes without a foul, you know? And then rotate them in, put the next one in. But I'm with you, Gabe.
No,
that quarter decided the game. Like, that was the game, basically, was that 23-9.
Well, and here's the thing. So here's the crazy part. The player that fouled out of the trio of all of these players, right? Cheyenne Sellers, Diamond Miller, and Abby Myers, who single-handedly kept Maryland in the game in the second quarter.
She had 14 points in the first half.
She picked up 2 fouls. She's the only player that fouled out.
Boom, boom. Back to back.
I know, but that's like, you left the only player that actually fouled out in the game when you could have at least staggered and gotten 2 minutes at Diane Miller, get 2 buckets and a stop, and then, okay, we're getting off the floor?
No. Let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to no. Wait, where are y'all? No.
Yeah. Other way.
No.
Other way.
Yeah. And no. Okay. Listen. And this is why, okay? And Gabe, you're coaching now, so don't play with me, Gabe. Listen, okay, I'm trying to help you. All right. All right. When I was coaching, okay, in a big game, one of our key players, she had two fouls. And one of our key inside 6'4", and it wasn't Bree, so just take that off the table as we say it.
Bree doesn't get in foul trouble.
It was not Bree that time in particular. But anyway, it was a post player for us. We needed her in the game. She was doing great. Picked up that second foul. And, it's in the first half. And I'm like, nope, come on over. Come on over and have a seat because nope. And then they went on this little run. We still had a lead. We were up by 12 or something. You know what I mean? But, that goes away quickly when you don't get stops, okay? Which is what happened with Maryland. So that happened. And she's looking at me with the knee shake. You know, you're sitting there and you see the kid like knee shaking, looking at me like, coach, like, I got you. Senior.
The same look Diamond was giving Brenda.
It's really hard because you know you want to trust them. And you do. Okay. So what did I do, Gabe? What do you think I did?
You put her back in.
I did. And guess she picked what up her third foul. And I never did it again. And it wasn't because I trusted her. And I believe,
but not really.
But I did, because if I didn't, I wouldn't have put her. I wouldn't have put her in. I put her back on the floor, dude. And this is what happened. She gets over. She's 6'4", right? The kid gets in front of her on a rebound, and she didn't like make contact into my kid. Mm-hmm. My kid was taller than this kid in front of her. She got the ball like this over her head. Tweet. I was like, no, three fouls. And that cost her, let me tell you what it cost her, and then us, it cost her her aggression in the third quarter, right? Because it was right before halftime. She picked up her third foul, and it was random. And it wasn't like she was trying to block a shot. It wasn't a block charge situation. Wasn't a fast break. Let me try to swing at this kid and knock into her body. It wasn't like one of those unconscionable situations. It was almost like a human thing, so she wouldn't get hit in the face with the ball because she was right there and she just got the ball. Seriously. I'll never forget it. And then I felt so bad. And then she just looked at me and I was like, no, like slow motion.
Did you lose? Did you lose the game?
We did. We ended up losing. It's still a bitter.
Did she foul out? Do you remember if she fouled out?
She did not foul out.
There you go.
but we lost.
that's different.
It changes the way you have to play. Because you can't play the same way with knowing like you're.
I understand,
you, Megan. Megan,
but Maryland still lost, so I still vote that they should have tried something.
I don't know. I don't think you can leave them out there, man. You can't just leave them out there.
One of them. You take them out and then you put them, you give them like a couple minutes when everything's going bad. And that's what she did against Arizona. She had to bring back Cheyenne, if you recall. Cheyenne, again, got into foul trouble. And then Cheyenne swore she was not going to get into foul trouble again. Cheyenne was wrong.
You can't control it, though. And the game, you watched the game, yes? Yeah, did you see how physical that game was?
It was very physical.
And not in a negative way. I mean, officials are officials. They're human beings. I thought that the way the game was being played today, I mean, any other day, maybe I would have put him in. But the way that game was being played, man, they were all over the floor. It was scrappy. Everybody was getting into it. You know, and when I say getting into it, it's not like fisticuffs. It's like getting into it with their aggression. Like defense was aggressive. Offense was attacking. Like, oh, there were just multiple opportunities to pick up that third foul. And nope. Because I've lived it, and I'm still suffering years later remembering it. So thank you for making me walk down memory lane and my way back, and live my way back to the conversation.
To your point, though, it's not just about how the game was being played; it's about how the game was being called. Which is fair to your point, is that there was a lot of quick whistles in that game, and we saw
for Abby such a Myers physical game
pick up two of them that maybe. Shouldn't have been called fouls that fouled her out. And obviously, those two happened after
Myers.
Brenda Freeze already. Abby Myers. Those two fouls happened after Brenda Freeze already made that decision. But I just think throughout the game, the refs were, there's if it was 50-50, they were calling a foul. So It is a tough situation.
Well, they're trying to control it though too, you know, because it is so physical. You're trying to control it because they were like in the mud. Both teams were like, yeah. This. What are you supposed to do? Like, you can't just let it go. I don't know. Like, I'm glad I'm not a referee.
It's a tough job. But hey, look, refs are refs. It's not what decided the game. In the end, it was South Carolina again, beating people to a pulp. You look at what they've done all season, very similar to what happened in this game, 25-7 on the offensive glass, 23 second chance points for South Carolina, 7 for Maryland.
I didn't see that.
And they had 70 field goal attempts. Maryland had 58. You're going to win most of the games when that's the field goal discrepancy, the offensive rebound discrepancy. If you can win that category by enough and then have the shooting margin be close, which it was, you're going to win. And then South Carolina today, I thought was interesting. 6 of 15 from three. That's 40% better than they normally are. Zaya Cook was 2 of 7. Yeah, right. Yeah. Like when Bree Beal's efficient
had a
like
great
this.
Game. Yeah,
she did.
So Megan, like, is there any hope for someone beating South Carolina? Not just like
wait, can we talk?
Let me ask a different question. Let's put this in a little bit of perspective then, because we will talk about South Carolina when we preview it. But like, what South Carolina has done here, getting to their third, this is their third straight Final Four, 42nd straight victory, 41st straight victory, something like that. Doesn't matter at this point. They have just been dominant throughout the year, and they haven't changed at all. So, Megan, what does it feel like? Like, can you put this into perspective historically for South Carolina?
Yeah, well, I think there hasn't been many teams, right, that have gone undefeated, made it to a Final Four. There's been a handful, but most of those won the national championship. Not all of them, but most of them have won the national championship. I think that's what everyone's expecting from the South Carolina team. Could they lose in the Final Four? We'll get to it. I mean, sure. They could lose. Anyone could lose. I think we've seen that in this tournament at this point. But I think it's just been a dominant season, regardless of what happens when they get to Dallas. And I think today, the thing that stood out to me is, I think so much of the season has been about, you know, their depth and their rebounding, what they get off the bench. But today it was Leah Boston, and they haven't maybe necessarily needed a Leah Boston to put up those kind of numbers in other games, but they needed it today, and she's going to deliver.
Yeah. No, I agree. Oh, go ahead, May.
No, go.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think the ball left her chin area. Like, she never brought the ball down. She was like, boom, boom. I mean, she was doing, and it wasn't like she was doing a Euro, but she cleared her space in the post from the chin up every move. Like, she was never here with the ball, ever, okay? She never exposed basketball to the defenders who were all around her, okay? She had the ball here. And it was here and up, here, let me move, excuse me, and put it up. I'm like, wow, like her technique was so just perfect. I was so impressed. I was watching her, and it wasn't just, you know, people talk about your footwork in the paint, and hers is fantastic too. But for me, as a former post player and coach, like you, that's what you want, right? Get out of the fray, right? You cannot bring the ball down. You can't try to swoop it up and do all these things, right? Leading into the defense, trying to get contact instead of trying to score the ball. And that's where I'm just going to leave that there. But you have to be able to clear your space, have two hands on the basketball, and still be able to get to your shooting pocket and shoot the ball. And I thought that was most impressive by Aaliyah Boston. But they also found her, to your point. They found her in those areas inside the restricted area where it was just easy for her to catch and score and keep the ball high. I mean, it's fundamentally sound. I was very impressed by that skill alone that she presented tonight, for sure.
10 field goals made is a season high for Aaliyah Boston. So pretty good night to find her in the paint. I mean, and South Carolina changed a little bit of what they've been doing. I mean, a little bit less of Camilla Cardoso, a little bit more Victoria Saxton, a little bit more space for Boston down there. And that comes back to the three-point shooting. Like, they were shooting, they were so hot in the first half that it eventually opened up space down low. And it comes back to the always problem we have with South Carolina is you cannot both guard their guards Or you can't keep them out of the paint. You can't guard all the guards, and you can't keep them off the glass. You can't. Right. You seem to be only able to do one most of the time. If you can do two, that's great. You need to do all three to beat them. So Calvin, I mean, what would you see from South Carolina today that kind of caught your eye?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of what Chrissy was talking about with Aaliyah Boston, that's important in particular. I think in this matchup, when you saw Maryland, especially when they got into foul trouble, have a lot of lineups on the court where their tallest player was 6'1". Mm-hmm. So Boston is going to have a huge height advantage that she often does, but not always against certain matchups. Mm-hmm. So her being able to do that and also do that, you see so many bigs who do that and then end up picking up that offensive foul when they have a smaller player on them because that player's head is like at their elbow, right? But right. Aaliyah Boston's under control. She doesn't do that. So I thought that was great. Obviously, the shooting that you talked about, no one's beating South Carolina when they shoot 40% from three. That was like, we don't see that very often from them. That's icing on the cake if you get that from them. And then you talked about the offensive rebounding. Like, even by their standards, they rebounded well over half of their own missed shots. Like, even by their standards, that's incredible tonight to get 57% of those. And we talked about this in our group chat a little bit, Gabe, but that whole crockpot thing, the whole wearing you down, body blow theory, whatever, like that plays into that because a lot of the things that you have to do against South Carolina to beat them require a ton of effort. And the first thing to go when you start to get worn out and people are in foul trouble so other people are having to play more minutes is all of that stuff that requires pure effort because you're so exhausted. And in the second half, I told you, Gabe, we started to see Maryland miss box outs. And you can't miss box out. You're going to give up offensive rebounds even if you do box out, but you have to try. You have to be box out. And as soon as you start to have those mental lapses, it's over. It's like you're cooked. Mm-hmm. And that's what I saw from South Carolina tonight, just beating them into submission, like you said, for 40 minutes and getting to that point.
All right, we'll get back to South Carolina. I do want to – we should move on because there's a lot of basketball to talk about, and we do have to get to the Miami Hurricanes, guys. It's still on the docket. We skip their Elite Eight game. We don't have to talk about that. We don't talk about their Elite Eight game. We can just go back to this.
No highlights. I'm good. Thanks.
Yeah. I do have my highlights. Damn, I should have put them in. Okay. I don't have them in.
Good. Oh, darn.
The game had highlights?
Not that one. I have from the other last week.
Actually, it was actually funny.
Iowa. Caitlin Clark. She did a thing. No biggie. First off, Iowa wins 97-83 over Louisville, a team who went on a very good run in March that I believe I told everyone about on our pick 'em show. But, 41 points, 12 assists, 10 rebounds, 3 steals, too. Just toss that in there. For Caitlin Clark, she's... I don't know what to say. Calvin, do you know what to say about her? Do you have anything to say? Can you say anything about her? Are there words?
Is it possible that she's still getting better? Like every day that we see her? I think she might still be getting better. Like I think she's better than she was a week ago when they played Southeast Louisiana or whoever in the first round. I think she's better than she was in the Big Ten tournament. It's every time we watch her, it's you think like you can't be any better than this. And then the next game she is. And she's going to have to be again in the next game because it's going to be the toughest game of her life.
Yeah, I think
go ahead, babies.
Okay. I think the other thing, though, to me was that obviously we can talk as much as we want to about Caitlin Clark because she was fantastic, but what they got from everybody else, because I think you look at this Iowa team last year and Caitlin Clark could have had a 40-point triple-double and they still might not have made the Final Four, but they make the Final Four because of what they're getting from McKenna Warnock, what they're getting from Gabby Marshall. Those players have stepped up so much and take their offense, which is obviously already very good, and made it even better. And I think that's why, because everyone knows, I'm sure, that listens to this podcast, that I have not been high on them because of their defense. And they are statistically, like, by far the worst defense to ever make the Final Four.
Paraphrase Megan from our Her Hoop Stats bracket show. Iowa has no chance of making the Final Four.
You said that thing. Oh, girl.
You did say that.
A multiple hit. Oh, yeah, I had to clip it. I got to clip it now. No chance that Iowa.
I was wrong. I'll admit it, obviously. But I think that's the difference, though, right? It's like the step, what they've got from everybody else, because they still don't get there with just Clark and just Sonato being the people to score. They needed that extra level of contribution, and that's what's made this team so much better, I think, in the Big Ten tournament, in the NCAA tournament so far, mm-hmm. at times during the regular season, but I think really in the postseason, and we've started to see it consistently, and that's why they're on this other level.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, let me say what I agree with before I get, you know, blasted on drag on Twitter. Look, I agree with the fact that Caitlin Clark has improved every second of every day. And for the people who are saying I'm some kind of like homer because I am rooting on some generational player that is blasted on the scene for the third year in a row, averaging 27 a game. Go ahead somewhere with that, okay? Because first of all, I'm gonna
we're
go
totally
ahead and
not homers on this podcast. First,
never.
Listen, I'm gonna crock pot this thought. Listen, because I'm trying to tell you. Look, Caitlin Clark is different, and when she was going bananas in that last game for a 40-point triple double, okay, and stay with me here. Put a pin in that. All right. A 40-point triple-double. Okay. So no one else is doing that who's playing right now. Who else is doing that today, collegiately? Who else is getting, you know, her sixth triple-double in one season, her 11th for her career? Stop it, okay? Leave me alone. I am a fan of the game. I don't care if someone else on another team was doing that. I'd be saying the same thing. So stop it. And I am not a homer. I'll tell you what I'm a homer for. Great players, team players, selfless players, all right? So if that's what I am a homer for, then book that, okay? Book that. That's me. I don't care. And I don't care who it is. If you play great basketball, if you are a selfless player, I mean, what does she have, 12 assists? Stop it, okay? She's diming off. And the reason why they won and advanced to the Elite Eight is because her shot wasn't falling, and she had 90% or 98% of the team's offense in the fourth quarter alone, and most of that was assisting her teammates because her shot wasn't falling. So here we are thinking that, oh my gosh, you're talking about her having this 40-point triple-double. Why aren't you talking about it? That's what I need to know. Why aren't you talking about the different level player that she is? Why aren't you talking about it? I mean, what am I supposed to do? See it and not talk about it? Stop it, okay? And the haters need to go ahead. I always say consider the source, but that made me angry because I'm like, I'm not homering for a team or a specific player. I'm homering for great play on the court, team play.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful to watch. And I don't care who's doing it, any level, any gender. I'm going to root for that every time. Times 10. 10 times out of 10, I'm doing it. So, you know, if you have something to say to me, you know, at me, and I'll clear it.
At the new ad. Yeah, what's the new one? There's a new one.
New at.
Crucial.
Is the one on the screen?
My new at, Christy51WScott. Let me know, okay, because I'll clear it up real quick. And if you know me, if you know me really well, you know that I will clear it up very quickly and concisely. So don't play with me on that, okay? I love the game, and I am unapologetically in love with the game of basketball, period.
Yeah,
right? And I don't care
if you don't like Caitlin Clark, you don't have to continue listening to this podcast. That's fine.
Period.
I do like what Megan said, because I think what Gabby Marshall has done in the past like couple weeks has been just crucial for this team. And I think it really – remember, the turning point, honestly, was that Maryland game where they get blown out at Maryland. Mm-hmm. And it's largely because, you know, Maryland was able to just completely get all over Caitlin Clark, and her teammates couldn't punish the Terps in return. They were open and they didn't make their open shots. Now they're making shots. They're not just open. Like they are within the flow of the offense. So like you're saying, that vision, that unselfishness that Caitlin Clark has to make always the right play.
Yeah.
And continue moving the ball on their offense has just been really good. I mean, this is not a team that runs a lot of complicated sets. Their more complicated stuff is honestly on the defensive end. Like that's where right. Lisa Bluter has her complicated sets is on the defensive end. Because on offense, it's just, hey, Caitlin, bring the ball up and someone get open and someone shoot. And sometimes it's just, Caitlin, can you toss the ball like you're a sidearm pitcher into Monica Sinano's, just like right into her hands, right underneath the basket.
No dribbles.
And it works. I mean, I just think they're playing on a different level from where they were this season. And it's happening right at the right time. For Iowa. Well, let's talk about Louisville though, because I think Louisville deserves a lot of credit for what they did in this tournament. I wasn't shocked by any of it because, like I said, Louisville's a pretty good team, coached by a pretty good coach. And Haley Van Lith is a player that raises her game to that level. I mean, you've had experiences with both these players, Christy, Caitlin, and Haley. What do you think of Haley's game and just her being in Seattle and like having all of those like blowing kisses to the fans and all that?
Man, listen, I had Louisville last year, all four rounds, right? Just saw them all the way through to the Final Four last year. So I got to know them. You know, I know they're different, you know, personnel wise this year, with three of their players in the WNBA. But with Haley Van Lith, like she's one of those different kind of kids. And she doesn't care. Like, I mean, when I say she doesn't care. Like, I don't care what you think of her because I don't care what you think of me. I'm going to let you know about what I think before you try to tell me about myself. Stay with me on that. But I think for her, I think she is so incredibly confident with the work that she puts into her game and her skill set that nobody can say anything to her about who she is. Right. And I co-sign that. I applaud that too, because nobody should be able to do that. You know yourself the best, so stop playing with her. I think with Haley Van Lith, with a different, personnel group, okay, around her, they started out the season in the top 10, right? And then they just had some ebbs and flows, some inconsistencies throughout the season, but were able to get to the Elite Eight. And it was on her shoulders. Because she willed that team mentally and physically to play the way that she wanted the game played, right? And she commands that of her teammates. And it's a great thing. She's a fantastic leader. She's an energy giver, right? I think towards the end of that game, the Elite Eight game, I think she was, you know, she was drawing contact, right? And getting herself to the free throw line and clapping it up. Like, but she still had that fight. Like, that's that juice. Like, you need to have players who are energy givers, who have that fire in the belly, the no quit mentality, because then if I'm her teammate, I'm like, let me try harder with what I do well. Right. Well,
and they have a lot of those players down in Louisville, right? Like they Olivia Cochran's that way. Mikasa Robinson's that way. And that's why that team has been so good.
Yeah.
I'm very happy for what they built there, and it's going to be weird without Mikasa Robinson around, but
I know.
Team coming back from them is really good too. Like, I mean, Calvin, Louisville's sticking around, I think, right? It's fairly safe to say in the ACC for probably ever.
No question. I mean, with the climate of today, like the transfer portal and everything, like, and also Jeff Walt, like, you could tell me this entire team is leaving and it wouldn't matter. Like, Louisville's going to be fine next year because, like, Jeff Walls has established that level of program, and that's what it is. So I don't care who they're getting back. They're going to be fine. But I was impressed with this run that they made, and not just Haley Van Lith, although, like, we saw this last year from her, too. She stepped up big. We need to start talking about, like, playoff Haley or whatever we want to call it.
March Haley.
This is 2 years in a row that she stepped up huge in March, huge.
Yeah.
But like you said, Mikasa Robinson, Olivia Cochran was huge in that last game, even though they lost against Iowa. I don't have it.
20 points.
20 points. And how many rebounds? Do you have it? 14,
yeah,
15 rebounds?
14 rebounds.
20 offensive. And 14? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they got contributions from a lot of places. So, as you know, I picked them out in the first round. They only won by two. So, I don't feel like I was that far off. But they definitely proved me wrong, as we talked about Virginia Tech did. A lot of people proved me wrong this March. Which is what it's all about. I love it.
It is.
Basketball teams that have close games against Drake end up doing well in the NCAA tournament. Shouts to the Miami Men. Shouts to Miami Men.
Somehow everything is about Miami.
It all comes back to Miami. Or Boca Raton, apparently, in men's basketball. Yes, that's the only place that basketball is played is in South Florida. I want to talk about the LSU Miami game. Do you have any final thoughts, Megan, from Louisville, Iowa?
No, let's go to the initial one.
Do you have any initial thoughts? Do you have any initial thoughts on LSU 54, Miami 42?
Let's see. That Miami South Carolina game in last year's tournament was ugly. This was uglier. I think that pretty much sums it up. Ugly game.
I kind of saw that coming, but it was even uglier than I have foreseen. Well, I'm sorry, Calvin, I cut you off.
The Kim Mulkey in-game interview just described the whole game. Like, she just railing how bad offensive basketball it was. And this isn't a betting podcast, but as someone who bet the under, I would argue what Megan said about how ugly it was, because it was beautiful to me the whole time. But
it was cashed in the first quarter.
When did they make the first three in this game? In the fourth quarter, I think. I don't know if we've ever had a tournament game without a three. We got really close.
I think it was in the fourth quarter. I don't think Miami made one. I think only LSU made one.
But, so, yeah. I mean, here's the thing about these three teams, though. Like, the shot missing, I should say, was ridiculous. And, like, I don't know how anyone could have seen that coming. But both of these teams have slowed it down in the tournament compared to where they were in the regular season, teams that like to push the pace. Like, we saw this. LSU-Utah should have been a game that hit like 170, right? But what did it finish? 120, 130? Mm-hmm. Because LSU has, and I think we're going to see this again in the Final Four, they've sort of turned into more of a half-court team, and they're sort of trying to play this, you know, like grind it out, probably not 54-42 type of style, but they're not trying to beat people 90-80 anymore. So, yeah, I'm with you. I did sort of see a little bit of an ugly game coming. I don't think thought it was going to be this ridiculous, but
I got a question for you, Christy, actually on that. As Calvin said, like the pace is slowing down for LSU. Does the game just slow down a little bit? I feel like when it gets tighter, when the stakes get so high, a lot of teams are going to slow it down more because everyone's trying to get back on defense, which doesn't always happen in the regular season. Right. And B, you're trying to be a little bit more deliberate with the basketball for whatever reason. If you want to be like LSU, who wants to rely on their defense, mm-hmm. or if you want to be like Miami, who wants to, I'm not sure why we tried to slow that game down. I don't think we did. I'm not sure what Miami tried to do in that game. None of it worked. But regardless, does the game slow down in March by itself?
I don't think so. And I don't think you should, right? And that's no shade to Miami or anyone else who thinks it's a great idea. I don't think that playing carefully, like, you know, without trying to make mistakes and the intentionality of protecting the basketball, and not to say, okay, you can't, you know, make good passes and think about what you're doing. I'm not saying that, but you can't be overly cautious in March. Like if you were playing like rambunctiously all season and you get to March, like we don't want to lose. You're going to lose. Okay. You got to play your style, your pace, the way you've played to get you to this point, or you're going to have problems. All right. You're going to change. If you try to slow things down, you're going to change the rhythm of what has brought you success. And who wants that? Who wants to go out there and feel differently in a must-win game? I don't. I have bad nerves. I need everything to be the way it always is. The routine is the same. It feels this play, the timing of this play, the screen is coming right now. Like we're going in motion with what we're doing, what we have been doing, because that's what's brought us wins and success. We're at our best then. So no, I don't think it's wise to slow down what you're doing or to be cautious. I know my high school coach, we were 28-0. I think, Gabe, I've told this story 1,000 times probably on the podcast, but we were 28-0. We were in this back and forth game in the state championship game. And at halftime, she came in. We had six seniors. We were all pressure filled. And she came in and she said, "You guys are playing not to lose instead of playing to win." And all of us looked around like, "Oh my God, that's we are." And we were playing so safe. And because we didn't want to lose, because before the coaches came in, all of us were saying, "We can't lose this game. Oh my God, we're seniors. Like, we got to win this game." And it was like we were stressing ourselves out to the point of like not playing the way that we played all year that got us to that point. And we were on this tightrope of like, "Oh my God, what if we lose?" So if I say pink elephant in the room, thinking of pink elephant, right? If we're saying, talking about losing, you're going to lose. So you have to focus on winning. We ended up winning by two and it was dramatic, but it was like, we had to, if we didn't have that checkpoint, that recalibration at halftime, who knows, we would have been 28-1. Lord have mercy, I'm glad we weren't. Anyway, but it was very stressful. But I think it's all about a mentality. It's all about a toughness. And that's why I always said that as a coach, like you can run 100 plays, but it's how you do things and it's why you're doing things. So if you play a certain way, a certain pace with a certain mentality and a certain competitiveness, then you have to bring that to the table every time. And that's your challenge, right? That's your challenge to be your best. Mm-hmm. You have to be consistent. And that's just not consistent in putting the ball in the basket, okay? That's consistent in the way you think about how you're competing. And it's a major, major deal, especially in postseason. No. And you have to rewire your brain and not play safe and just freaking go for it. That's what it's all about. And you have to be tougher. You got to be tougher.
Miami had 18 turnovers, so I'm not sure they were being too careful because they're not a team that turns the ball over that often. I think LSU deserves a ton of credit, right? Like LSU's guards were all over Miami's guards. I think I said that maybe to you, Calvin, before the game. I was like, Miami's guards might have a bad time because those guards for LSU were something else. I mean, and on both ends, right? Alexis Morris has 21 points. And Miami has one player that scores over 10. Sophomore Jasmine Roberts, so 22 points. That's good on the old resume going into next year. But just like really great defense from LSU, very bad offense all around. But still, it was a game that happened. It was Miami's first Elite Eight game in their school's history. Megan, did you want to rail against this game at all?
Really?
Against its existence.
Yeah, no. I mean, it was ugly, but it is what it is.
It's a game that happened.
Yeah, it's a game that happened. No, I mean, I think going into it, I think the outcome is, regardless of how we got there, the outcome is probably what people expected. And it was the end of this kind of like fairy tale run for Miami, and LSU is going to the Final Four behind Kentucky.
I wasn't surprised. This wasn't a fairy tale. This was a normal story. This is ain't nothing for the Canes. No, great run by the Canes. I do want to take it back, though, very quickly to Sweet 16. I don't think we have time to talk all about Sweet 16. I just want to talk about Miami.
Man.
Shutting down Maddie.
He wants to rub it. He wants to rub it.
Shutting down Maddie's speakers.
Shutting my laptop.
She's doing a great job defensively against Maddie Seegers, who had 31 points. It's fair to say
they
that,
did
right?
do a decent job on her. That's just Maddie, though. Like, yeah. People do a good job on her, and she's still gonna get hers. Mm-hmm. That game was a heartbreaker if you were rooting for.
Oh
that
yeah, that was rough.
But it was a great game in terms of like you thought it was over. That run that Nova made to come all the way back and then to finish it off, Miami got the win. But I mean, the third and fourth quarter of that game was insane.
Yeah, maybe it's just me as a fan. I never once felt safe in that game. I was like, they're coming back the entire game. Because Miami has not won a game this year. Possibly.
I felt the same way, too. A lot of people were on me like, Nova's getting embarrassed. And I was like, just wait. Like, they're going to figure it out. They came back. I think they were down 15 with like 5 minutes to go at home against St. John's this year. They won that game. I was like, it's not over till it's over.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And you see, like, Maddie Seegers had that one play that, like, she scored, like, 5 points in 10 seconds.
Yeah, she got it was, like, a three and then steal three. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty rough. It got hairy there for Miami. But I kind of felt those coming the whole time. I feel like the team also just expects, like, look, the end of this game is going to be crazy, and that's why they've been so good at the end of the games, Miami. Just like, this game's going to be nuts at the end because we're not the level of team to put someone away, and we are also the level of team that no one could put us away at because yeah. we play this way. So I loved what Miami did. My heart goes up. Tough way to go down, but it also came on the heels of the men making the Final Four. It was literally moments after the men making the Final Four. You know, they say March is about the highest of highs, lowest of lows. That hit real hard. Yeah. The come down from the Canes men making the Final Four to
the it's way Miami when it's went the down. Other way around.
Yeah, right? Deep in the muck, disgusting game that just kept getting worse. For Miami. Let's preview the Final Four. Do we have times? I don't know if we have times yet.
The South Carolina Iowa is the later one.
I think 7 Eastern for LSU, Virginia Tech, and then right after that.
Yeah, so we got 7 Eastern, LSU, Virginia Tech on ESPN, 9 p.m. For Iowa, South Carolina. So
Friday, Sunday,
mm-hmm. Saturday, Megan and I. Who has not mentioned that her men, the UConn men are also.
Yeah, because I realized that no one listening to us cares about the UConn men at the moment. This is not a UConn podcast.
Well, we've never been, okay? We've never been to this podcast, to this whatever. I'm going to act the fool as much as I want while giving all of the analysis of my other team that was also in the Elite Eight. Megan, did both your schools program make the Elite Eight?
Can talk to me when your school wins.
Was there
are Gabe and I going to survive this weekend in Dallas together? We'll see.
I just say, I mean, I don't know what I'd do if both Miami's programs were not in the Elite Eight. It just seems like it wouldn't be as much fun.
I don't know what to do if it was, you know, my men's team's first time in the Final Four and not our sixth.
I wonder what that's like.
Yeah. How's Ohio State doing, buddy? All right, let's preview the games. We'll start with the big one. Let's just start with Iowa, South Carolina. Times be damned. There's a lot of questions going into this game. The primary one, though, I think is going to come in Iowa's transition offense. Can they get out in transition? Can South Carolina, who likes to send at least 2 players to the offensive glass, can they stop the break with 3 players? Megan, I feel like you've thought about this game. Soon as you saw like how Iowa's playing, you're like, I have to come up with some stuff for Iowa in the Final Four. What have you thought about for this game?
Yeah, well, I think the question or the thought that I have a lot of my Twitter mentions is that, like, South Carolina can't score enough to beat Iowa. Well, I think they debunked that today because they just scored 86 points, so we can ignore that point because it's irrelevant. But, yeah, I think my concern for Iowa – I'm going to start with why I'm concerned for Iowa, and then I'll talk about what Iowa's doing well. But my concerns for Iowa are, one, that – South Carolina has Bria Beal, and she's probably the best on-ball defender in the country, and that's apparently Gabe disagrees with that. One of the best on-ball defenders in the country, and that's going to make Caitlin Clark's job a lot harder than it is on a normal night. My other concern for them is, despite how good this run has been, they haven't really faced anyone that's as dominant in the post as South Carolina is, and I think we've seen them struggle with defense in the lane. I mean, you saw Olivia Cochran put up 20 and 14 on them in that Elite Eight game. Mm-hmm. Cochran's really good. Aaliyah Boston and Camila Cardoso are a lot better. So I think that's going to be really challenging for them.
I agree with the second point you made. I think the first point, actually, Bree Beal, she was kind of a target today for Maryland. I thought they saw Bree Beal. They saw Aaliyah Boston in drop coverage, and they said, we can attack this, and they did attack it a couple of times. So I actually think you're not going to guard Caitlin Clark with one person. That's just to be a fool's errand. I just don't know if South Carolina is the type of team that's going to, you know, switch their defense, and maybe they do end up guarding that. Maybe they do end up guarding Clark with one person. And that becomes, well, are you sending different bodies at her? Like, do you send Fletcher at her? Do you send Cook at her, who are awesome defenders, Beal being one of those 3 great defenders? But Calvin, like, am I wrong for saying that Bree Beal was attacked today? And what do you think about that defensive matchup?
I did see her get attacked some today. I think her whole body of work and her career is enough. Like I'm really still fascinated for this great matchup. But no one can guard Caitlin Clark one on one. But if anyone can come close, it's Bria Beal. I do like what you said though about South Carolina not switching up what they're gonna do, because I think a lot of teams that play Iowa have to get weird and have to try something different, because like we're not gonna beat Iowa unless we think outside the box. And we saw like when Maryland blasted them, they threw all those junk defenses at them, right?
Yeah.
But South Carolina doesn't have to get weird and do junk and whatever, be who they are in this game, like you said. And on both ends, and on the other end too, we talked about me, Megan, and Gabe on our last podcast about how the one thing that Iowa has actually become fairly good at on the defensive end over the last couple of years is rebounding. But part of that may be because everyone's so afraid of them in transition that they don't crash the glass and they get back on transition. So Iowa's defensive rebounding numbers have looked better. But you know who's not going to be afraid to crash the glass is South Carolina. They don't care who they're playing. They're going to send bodies to the glass on every offensive possession. Because like you said, they're not going to switch anything up. They are who they are. They have their identity, and they're going to play that way. So Iowa's the one that's going to have to step up and say, like, we're going to have to beat South Carolina at their game. You know, South Carolina can definitely, to whoever's talking to Megan on Twitter, can definitely score enough points to beat Iowa.
Yes.
Like, the other thing I'm fascinated about in this matchup is Monica Sonato, because Caitlin Clark, even against South Carolina's defense, is going to get hers. I don't know if Monica Sonato is going to get hers, though, because against all of those post defenders, and Monica Sonato is not a player like Mackenzie Holmes, who gets the ball, surveys, makes post moves. She's a player who gets deep position, never dribbles, and finishes. But is she going to get that deep position against South Carolina? I don't know. Okay. And if you're like a Mackenzie Holmes, sometimes you don't need that position, but I think Monica does. So I don't know if we see Monica have a big game in this game. And I don't know if Caitlin Clark is going to be enough, even if she drops 40, to win this on her own. But she might. She's the one player who could beat South Carolina on her own, but I'm not sure if it's going to be enough.
What do you think of that, Christy?
Well, you know what? I think with the depth that South Carolina has, especially on the interior, and the size. You saw that become an issue tonight for Maryland, you know, with them getting the second chance points, the big differential, what'd you say, was 23-7 for second chance points. I mean, that could be a factor if Monica Sonato gets in foul trouble. And we've seen Monica Sonato get in some foul trouble. And after that, Hannah Stolke, who I love, is a freshman, right? But she is a fabulous player. And I love everything about what she does. But she's different than Monica Sonato inside, right? I mean, she [S2] Absolutely. [S1] Has terrific hands. Clark is going to put the ball right in your hands. Like, all you have to do is catch and shoot. That's not what I'm worried about. It's the experience factor in fifth-year player Monica Sonato. And you know, you can't really equate for that, right? Like you can't really compare that. So I'm not saying she's worse because she's younger. I'm like, she's younger, okay?
Yeah.
And the experience of these moments, right? Playing the postseason, winning titles, back-to-back titles. Like Stokey has one title. Sonato has a couple of them. You know what I mean? There's something to that mentally that is different. The urgency of a fifth year player, it could be your last game ever, you know, with a freshman having hundreds of games ahead of you. And that's no knock on Iowa or on the two people individually. I'm just stating a full fact. And those of you who know. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Knox is a better player than Skulky. We can say
right. That. I mean, but she has more experience.
She's got 4 years on her. I mean, come on.
That's all I'm saying. And in 4 years, Stokey may be better as a fifth year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So let's just be honest. And because of all the things that she's going to develop in her game, we just don't know that yet. But I can see that being a possibility. So for me, the depth on the interior is going to be an issue if Sonato gets in some foul trouble. Because then you have lack of experience coming in behind her in the post. And South Carolina is going to put two bigs inside. And boy, you better box out. Like, you can't miss that, okay? And the way that Iowa likes to run, you might not get, you know, the opportunity to do that, right? Because of the way South Carolina gets on the offensive glass, Gabe, like you said. So I think it's going to be really interesting to watch the dynamic of what South Carolina does on their offensive board work. I think it's going to be equally as intriguing to see how Monica Sonnano stays disciplined on the defensive end and offense too. If she's crowded, she can't bump into people. You know what I mean? Like she can't, like she has to maintain discipline on both sides in the paint. Like they need her. They need her to be in there. Right. And Clark needs her. Right. Cause they're on a string. Those two are like directly on a string. And Clark's soccer skills, I heard her telling Holly Rowe, you know, it's because of the way she played soccer, is the way, you know, how she finds the angles to pass and how she's just so shifty and just gets here and there and just dimes people off. I love it. And don't at me about it too, because it's pretty basketball. So stop playing
with me. That makes a lot of sense, actually, the way she sees the floor and like kind of leads her team, like leads the players into the passes.
Absolutely.
I think so. Sonnano has to stay on the floor for a bunch of different reasons, all the ones you just said. And also, you know, with Monica in, it creates a much bigger pick and roll threat for South Carolina to deal with. And you know, as I was saying, hey, maybe there is a place where Iowa can get an on ball mismatch. Honestly, again, if you try to cover Caitlin Clark one on one, you're already at a mismatch. I don't care who the defender is. Like, she's just too good and too smart and too fast at making her decisions to be covered one on one. So if you have Sonnano in there setting the pick and rolling hard to the basket, which is one of the things she does best, that involves a lot more of the defense rather than someone else who the defense may not be as worried about catching the ball and finishing at the rim. And then that kind of comes into a concern I have for South Carolina. And again, I think this definitely comes down to, as it always does, the freaking offensive boards. When we talk about South Carolina, it has to come up. It's one of the biggest things they do. And then how can Iowa get out in transition? I think that's where the battle is. But I do think the pick and roll coverage for South Carolina is going to be really interesting. Do they kind of send Boston out to hedge a little bit more? Do they send, you know, maybe some blitzes? I think Saxon's a really good blitzer. But then you're putting your defense in rotation on the back end where all those shooters are. So, Calvin, do you think they're going to – I mean, they do change up their pick and roll coverages mostly. They basically play a man, but they do change their pick and roll coverages up at South Carolina. Do you think they should change?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they should throw some different looks at them. What I'm the most interested in is not necessarily, you know, hedging, blitzing, all of those that you're talking about with the two players involved in the pick and roll, but the tags and the help from the other three players. Because what Megan talked about, those other three players are on there to space the floor and shoot. And in the last game, they did that. They did that great. And when those three players, whoever they are, the starting lineup, it's Warnock, Kate Martin, and Gabby Marshall, but whoever's out there, when those three players are knocking down three-pointers, like, Iowa is almost impossible. To, like, you can't stop them. You just have to score with them. Because Caitlin Clark's going to get hers, and that pick-and-roll game is dangerous. It all comes down to whether those – in that Maryland game I brought up, those three players didn't make any shots, and that's why they got blasted. So –
yeah.
What is South Carolina going to do on the back end of that pick and roll coverage from those three players? Are they going to live with them taking shots like Maryland did? Are they going to stay home? That's what I'm the most interested in.
Well, we'll have to see. Because I think South Carolina probably just says, yeah, we'll get back to you. Try to take it. We'll see. There's going to be some long arms coming at you. But we'll see. All right, we got to move on. It's almost 1 a.m. It's on a...
Night is young.
It's a school night. wait, is it? I mean, Chris.
It is a work night. I do have to work tomorrow.
I'm gonna go ahead. Once I finish this conversation, I'm gonna get right on the plane. But matter of fact,
let's. Are you flying back tonight?
Oh no! I mean, in a couple hours. Yeah, early first thing smoking.
Oh,
I'm out.
Boy. All right. Let's back in Northern Virginia. All right. Let's talk about LSU Virginia Tech. I think it's going to be a great game. Personally, I think this is a really interesting matchup. You have Kitley versus Reese, two very different styles of bigs. I think it's going to be a very good battle, though, down low. And I think those two kind of counterbalance. So then we get a very interesting set of matchups across the board. I would say, you know, you look at those talent levels, right? In between the rosters outside the star, I'm not sure which one is better with the way Georgia Amore is playing. Like, Megan, do you think, you know, does Virginia Tech actually have a little bit more talent around their star than LSU does?
I think it depends how LSU comes out. Cause I think, I don't know, like
Alexis Morris at times has been really, really, really good for LSU. And maybe not consistently, but she, like in that game against Miami, she was the difference maker for LSU. So I think if they get that version of Alexis Morris, it's a pretty even matchup. And then it also depends what they get from Flaji Johnson as well, because she's, you know, a freshman, it's hard to be consistent, especially this time of year as a freshman. But when she's on, she's really good. And then I think, like you said, we've talked about Georgia Moore. She's been fantastic for Virginia Tech in this tournament, the ACC tournament, at the end of the regular season. She's really been kind of, I think, the difference in Virginia Tech the first half of the season and Virginia Tech in the streak that they're on now. It's largely been driven by her performance. So they've got that going for them. I think it's a pretty even matchup, and it kind of comes down to who's – role players outside of their stars show up more that day.
Yeah, and there's really interesting matchups down in the role player category, whatever the non-star category. Taylor Soul is just, I think she's gonna have a really interesting time against LaDaisia Williams. If that is the matchup, I don't know what they're gonna go with, but it's amazing matchups across the board. Also, the coaching matchup, Christy, is what I want to ask you about. It's like,
oh, yeah.
So Kenny Brooks, I mean, that is our guy on courtside. Yeah. That's everyone's guy. How could you not like him? He's just like the nicest dude. He oozes chillness. on the other side is Kim Mulkey. Does not ooze chillness.
We didn't answer the most important question. What is Kim Mulkey going to wear?
I don't know. I don't know, man. Emma said she looked like Yzma in the one with the flowers. Yzma from
Again, at her.
How many Disney characters has she been? She's been Cruella de Vil.
Cruella de Vil.
Yeah, she's been checking off all the boxes.
Yeah. But this coaching matchup is fascinating because I would say, I mean, Kenny Brooks right now, if I need someone to draw up a game plan and have his team execute, I'm probably going to Kenny Brooks, and no shade to anybody else. But then we have Kim Mulkey on the other side, who's won national championships at the national championships. I just feel like Kenny Brooks has more options with this Virginia Tech team than LSU does with their team. Do you think that, like, is that something that matters as much as that coach has won a national championship and this team has really kind of steamrolled a lot of the competition?
I mean, I think so. I mean, I think that makes a difference when you can, I mean, you don't ever want to overcoach, but at the same time, you want to have some tricks in the bag that you can go to when you after a timeout, you want to be able to set up something that you haven't shown, right? Mm-hmm. But you've practiced it, but you haven't shown it, and they haven't scouted it, and it works. Let me tell you something. I told you, Gabe, about that one time player that did that, and we got the and one on it, and then my point guard looked over like, so it worked.
I saw Kenny do that at the ACC tournament. They drew up a play, and it worked, and he immediately went to his assistant coach and like gave her biggest high five ever.
Exactly.
So I that feeling seems intoxicating Kenny Brooks. He keeps calling plays that are really awesome and we haven't seen all year. And this team just executes them.
Exactly. And I think that's going to give them an edge, right? Because – it's hard to prepare, obviously, if you haven't seen something, but you've practiced it, and you have to give Kenny Brooks credit for, you know, having his team have reps and they're ready so that in game like that, hey, remember Tuesday and we went through all these ATOs, that third one we did, this is what it is. Look, boom, boom, you go here, you go there, boom, boom, boom. And they go out there and they score on it. Come on now. There's nothing better. There's nothing better when it translates from the whiteboard to the court and you get a bucket. And the one I was telling you, Gabe, listen, I almost lost my mind. I was so excited. But we had never shown that play, you know? And not only did we score, we got the and one and made the free throw. Hey, and so, look, I don't know. There's a lot to be said about execution, but there's also a lot to be said about organization of thoughts and reps on ATOs and et cetera. Yeah.
And Kenny this season said multiple times, this is the smartest team he's ever had, that they're actually coming to him with play ideas that they ran in the past, like that, you know, Virginia Tech ran 3 years ago.
And they
really help him in that area of terms of getting them ready to play. That's right. I think it is a huge lift, because when you look at LSU, obviously a great team, but that's not what I just said about Virginia Tech doesn't necessarily apply to LSU in terms of being able to execute those offensive game plans. LSU just comes out and kind of tries to just punch you in the mouth and play hard-nosed basketball and wear you down a little bit like South Carolina does. It's not quite at that level yet. But you have to think, right? Like, Flaja Johnson may get going. I mean, Calvin, do you think we should be hopeful about her in the Final Four? Because she's had a rough go of it for a couple games.
Yeah, well, we were texting about how Miami wanted her to shoot, and she shot. And that, I mean, that worked out for Miami defense. It's more to make it better. But, I mean, she's going to have to knock down shots. I think I was looking up stats, by the way, while you guys were talking about this, on Kenny Brooks, Virginia Tech, second in the country, baseline out of bounds efficiency, eighth in the country, and sideline out of bounds, to you guys' point.
What about, excellent. The ATOs?
Excellent.
Yeah. Right, 15%. Excellent.
85th right. percentile in ATOs, which is lower than those other two. That's bad compared to the other two. That's how good they are. And 91st percentile in the last four seconds of the shot clock. All of these numbers, 80, 90th percentile on all of these situational stuff, which tells you that that's a coach who knows what he's doing in terms of the cerebral stuff like you guys were talking about. So, I'm really, really looking forward to this matchup in terms of that. And in terms of, you brought up Angel Reese and Elizabeth Kitley, and I think advantage Angel Reese in that one. I know you said maybe they kind of wash out, but to me, Angel Reese is a better rebounder. She's better able to handle physicality. Elizabeth Kitley is great at defending without fouling, so we'll see. Angel Reese, probably going to try to get her in foul trouble. I don't know if it's going to work because I think Elizabeth Kitley's really good at keeping herself on the floor, probably better than Monica Sinano or whoever, some of the others we've talked about. Mm-hmm. That's the focal point of this matchup for me.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an awesome battle down low. And then just love the post. Every team in the Final Four, even though Iowa is to describe Iowa as a post team is a little bit of a misnomer. But
I mean, they have one. Like, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, they're not looking to dump it in, you know.
One that they play at a time. But listen, look, don't do that to Monica now. Listen, that's
a great. I'm saying they're not a post up team, you know what I'm saying? Not that they don't have a post.
I don't agree.
Okay.
You don't think Monica Sinano gets a body on early?
Yeah, but they're not. No, I'm saying, Christy, you know what I'm saying. I'm saying
no.
Gar gets the ball on the wing. We got a wing entry. All right. We got the big. Okay. Like, we're looking to post up. You know, this is not good for our audio. I forget it's a podcast. Ball faking. They're not sitting around. Like, Iowa is pass, boom, we're in the post.
What are you doing, Gabe? Look,
I'm both.
No.
He's trying to do a TikTok dance.
He's faking a pass to make a pass. Make a pass to make a pass, Gabe.
No, but for real, no. All you're saying, like, okay, what you just said is valid. I hear what you're saying, but listen to me though. Look, does Monica Sinano not get early post position, so all she has to do is catch and shoot? And don't you want to just do that?
That's all. I'm just saying.
We're saying exactly, the same
thing? That's her whole game.
I'm saying that. We're all in.
Do we like
back to my original point. All these teams got to post. We all got to post in the Final Four again.
Okay.
But I'm saying Iowa doesn't sit there and, like, you know how South Carolina sits there and it's 30, 20 seconds of sitting here, we're getting this ball into Aaliyah Boston. We are sitting here until the post is open and we're not moving. Iowa doesn't necessarily – Iowa, I think, actually posts up in a much more efficient fashion.
There you go. Okay, so we're saying the same
thing. I like Iowa's post-ups.
Okay, good. Okay, we're saying the same thing. I thought you were saying that she just, you know, all she does is shoot. I'm like, no, she's, like, no, working her butt off down there. You know how hard that is to have somebody's knee in your
She gets to the spot first.
Hamstring, okay, and in your neck, and you got to hold them off and catch it.
She beats people in the spot. Yeah. There's going to be something interesting for
a knee in her neck. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, if you got a knee in your neck, come back.
Something went wrong. Did I say knee?
It should be a foul.
That's a foul.
I think we should all go home.
Arm bar.
We're not making picks.
Arm in the neck.
We're not making picks because we're all going to be in Dallas come next week. Yay. So we will be talking to you a lot from Dallas. I may lose my voice come Sunday. We'll see what happens. Megan may lose her voice. We may never speak to each other again. So this may be the last Hurry Up Fest podcast with me and Megan together.
But that, the car ride home from Houston on Sunday morning or Saturday night might be a little rough.
I might get my own car. Doing that. That's bold.
I might get my own car.
I'm not we'll doing see. That with y'all. So on your own on that Houston thing.
But anyways, we love that everyone got to hang out. Sorry we didn't get to live your comments. Whoever pointed out, Mike Swinhart pointed out D2 and D3 championships will be played at the Final Four on Saturday for the people whose men's basketball team didn't make the other Final Four. I'd suggest going to that one because that seems awesome.
Yeah. Hey, shout out Ashland, by the way, in the D2 championship. Best shooting team I've ever seen at any level. They're first in the country in 2-point percentage, 3-point percentage, everything down across the board. I watched them play in the Final Four. Everyone should watch them if you have a chance.
They are the first team that comes up on Synergy when you go to the leaderboard because they lead the country in points per possession.
I want to see that then.
Ashland. Hey, shouts out to Nova Southeastern, another South Florida team, for winning the D2 men's title. I think I forget who's in the women's tournament though, actually. Who's in the title game?
In D3?
We're not going to preview it. Megan has to go home. Well, next week for the D2 D3 preview coming up on the Her Hoop Stats podcast. I'm Gabe.
All of them.
That's Megan. That's Christy. That's Colin. We'll see you soon. Good night. Ooh, we have to wait till this broadcast goes out.